Chapter 12. Helotine, on the border between Escadan and Canticus. After the ritual had ended, Squad Iaptus broke up and went their separate ways. The time of battle was drawing near, and with it the need for the swearing of oaths and the marking of brands in flesh. Most of the salamanders were returning to the barracks houses in central Escadan, except, notably, half of 6th Company's Devastators, led by Venerable Korad. The Dreadnought had maintained heavy bombardment throughout the night in conjunction with armoured elements from the Cadian 81st under Colonel Redgage. Military intelligence could not ascertain whether the punitive barrage was achieving much beyond the slow depletion of ammunition, but Korad had assured Captain Drakkar it was the only way to safeguard the sections of the city they still held, and so such attrition had been deemed worthwhile. Valin had not gone back with the others, despite Naib's vocal protests. He craved solitude, wanting to return to his reverie begun in the eaves of the shattered scriptorium before Sorad's ritual cremation. So he took to patrolling the Escadan-Canticus border in an effort to still his racing mind. He went armed and armoured, flamer in hand, but with the igniter for its promethium reserve still cold. Canticus was still contested, and designated safe regions could change quickly in such a fluid theatre of war. Several enemy spies and would-be saboteurs had already been discovered and neutralized since nightfall. They added to the clutches of deserters who also presented a problem to Drakkar's officially sanctioned patrols, but who had lessened in number since the Ecclesiarchy's arrival. Despite the ostensible distrust between the other Imperials and the Battle Sisters, Valin considered that their presence on Helotine might be of some benefit. Not long after leaving the others, Valin felt the hackles rise on the back of his neck. This was despite the heat and heft of his hulking armour, with its low humming generator a constant presence. He reached out with his auto-senses. Someone was following him, but not bothering to hide the fact. Their identity did not remain mysterious for long. Valin knew of only one candidate. "Why are you following me, Sepelius?" Valin heard the apothecary step out into the open as the weight of his armoured form crushed rubble underfoot. "What gave me away?" Sepelius asked sardonically, gesturing to his bone-white battle-plate. Valin turned his back on him. "I came out here for solitude, not further cross-examination." "Through the fire," said Sepelius, just as Valin started walking. "I saw it." Valin stopped, but did not turn around.
"Saw what?"
"That look in your eyes. You have been dreaming again." Valin stayed rigid, but felt his irritation giving way to curiosity. He longed to understand everything he had seen in the fire canyons, and what it portended, if anything. "He dreamed, you know," said Sepelius.
"Who did?"
"Dakir." Now Valin turned, his eyes burning with anger.
"Don't insinuate, brother. I'm tired of hearing your lips do it."
Sepelius held up his hands plaintively. "I merely point out the correlation. Curious how history can echo through the ages, how prophecies can align more than once in a given generation." He paused for a beat. "Rebirth." Valin said nothing. His eyes spoke for him, making the apothecary's narrow in turn. Sepelius smiled incredulously. "You think he's alive?" A sudden tightening in Valin's jaw cascaded across his features until his entire face had hardened. He did not bother to veil the threat. The warning in his tone was obvious.
"Leave me alone."
Sepelius bowed, then backed away obeisantly. "Darkhair almost destroyed Nocturne. Are you worried you might be like him, Valin? A vessel through which he might return?
He was our savior. Valin wanted to put more conviction into his reply, but it came out half-hearted.
He was both and none, or so the prophecy of the Ferro Ignis portended.
You don't believe in prophecy. Empirical truth is all you care about.
Even to Valin, it sounded weak as a retort.
Sepelius saw it at once. He gently shook his head.
Now you're just reaching, brother. Think on what I've said, Valin. We can talk again, you and I, he said, and disappeared off into the ruins.
Valin let him go. He had moved off again when he heard the faint crunch of stone once more. Sepelius, I told you to...
Another stood before him, clad in deep green. It looked almost black in the darkness, as if a shadow lay across the figure.
Kaidak? Follow me, said Kaidak, and went off into the ruins. Valin saw he was heading deeper into Canticus, and followed. In the darkness of the night, the ruin resembled even more of a hollowed-out shell shrouded in abject black. Sorad had died here, his duty ended by the teeth of a Chaos Warrior's chain blade. His blood still painted the wall from where it had jetted free of his body in a crimson arterial spray. A pall of death and regret lay heavy on the site of their skirmish with the Black Legion Terminator. The warrior's blood also tainted the place, but in a different way. Both bodies had been removed, the traitors dragged out with chains and then incinerated without ceremony, so only the echoes of their passing remained. Working their way silently through Canticus's shattered streets and buildings, the two salamanders got as far as the breach Valin and Nyab had made in the outer wall, when Kaidak raised his gauntleted hand for caution. Why are we here, Kaidak?
Valin hissed. Kaidak gestured into the gloomy hollow of the building. With his enhanced vision, Valin could see in the darkness, but when he followed Kaidak's pointing finger, the meaning of what he saw was still unclear. They retreated to either side of the breach. Valin called across it, careful to keep his voice quiet.
Who is she?
One of the Adepta Sororitas was inside the ruin, her back to them, and currently unaware of the salamander's presence.
I tracked her after the ritual. Thought she was the enemy,
Kaidak hissed back. Valin was considering whether they should just announce their presence and call the sister out there and then. But when he looked inside again, she was gone. He mouthed to Kaidak,
Where?
Kaidak gave him the facial equivalent of a shrug, but then nodded as the sister reappeared. She had emerged as if from the shadows, seemingly out of nowhere. Her route took her deeper into the ruins and away from the breach in the wall, so she remained ignorant of being watched. Valin waited with Kaidak until she was gone before moving inside. Donning his helmet, he cycled through the visual spectrum afforded by his retinal lenses until he found what he was seeking. A small sub-chamber existed below the floor, hard to see in the rubble and half hidden by the dark. Exchanging a glance with Kaidak that prompted both to ready their weapons, Valin descended a set of shallow steps and went inside. More darkness within, but Valin saw everything in variegated hues of night vision green. Bones lay smashed all over the floor, disturbed from within alcoves. Some had been snapped, others crushed underfoot. Were he seeing it in daylight, Valin believed he would have found scorch marks too, for the faded stench of burning smothered everything. They were standing in a reliquary chamber, one of the holy sites the canoness had described during her volatile first meeting with the chapter.
Place looks ransacked, said Kaidak.
Doesn't look like a search,
Valin replied. Kaidak knelt down to run his hand through the shattered bone fragments.
He was here, he muttered. That traitor that killed Sorad.
How do you know? Asked Valin.
His taint is pervasive. There is blood mixed in with this grave dust. He didn't just want to destroy, said Kaidak, standing.
He wanted to profane, Valin concluded.
Why? To weaken it.
Valin turned his head.
The spiritual hold of the throne on this city,
Kaidak explained.
To what end?
To let whichever master he served do whatever it is he cannot do while that hold is still strong.
And the sister?
Kaidak slowly shook his head.
I don't know yet.
More questions lurked in the shadows of Helatine before any answers would be forthcoming. Valin had one he could ask immediately.
You could have done this alone. Why involve me?
I couldn't be sure what I would be facing. Two stand a better chance of someone making it back. As it is, I don't know what to make of any of this.
Valin nodded, deeming it reasonable justification.
We do nothing for now, he said. Not until we know more.
Agreed.
Valin held out his hand.
I may have misjudged you, Kaidak.
Kaidak ignored the offer and headed back up the stairs.
No, you didn't, he said.
Cleric watched the two drakes. He liked to watch a murderous voyeur crouched atop a perch of crumbling stone. He was relatively close enough to tell they had no idea what the female fanatics were really here on Helatine to do. It amused Cleric to linger proximally to his foes, to revel in the knowledge of their ignorance of his presence.
I could kill them easily from this distance.
So still and quiet, deep in shadow, a casual passerby would have mistaken him for a statue. The drakes disappeared into the ruin, but they would be back.
Nothing for you there, little drakes.
Cleric only broke his silence when the salamanders had gone, and he realized he was not alone.
Good evening, brother.
Someone had tried to creep up on him, sleekly wending their way up the shattered ridge to his rocky vantage point. No one surprised Cleric. He had a way about him, a means of simply knowing when others were present and what their intentions towards him were. Not precisely, he wasn't that gifted, merely a vague sense of their humours at a given moment. An armoured warrior stepped more heavily from the shadows, resorting to his usual gait, now his subterfuge had been uncovered so expertly.
I thought I had you that time.
I know you did, Zwadek. I read your sanguinity as easily as priest reads the vagaries of the warp. So, beyond your feeble attempts to catch me lurking, what is it exactly that you want?
You are requested, brother, Zwadek replied, quietly settling down to crouch alongside Cleric.
Everyone is being recalled.
Cleric raised an eyebrow, wrinkling the skin across his handsome face. Like so many of the Emperor's children, he aspired to be perfect. And like so many of his brothers, that desire had become twisted over the millennia. Cleric's skin was porcelain white, his features strong and chiseled as if they were hewn from marble. His eyes were black, shiny like opals, his hair silver white. Daggers were his favored weapon, and he carried two sheathed at each hip. A short cape of cured human leather trailed below the power generator of his armor, which was pristine in heliotrope purple.
Interesting, Cleric replied. And what does he say about the others? Any news from the warp?
They made planetfall, but nothing further beyond that.
He thinks the mission may have gone awry, blames fate. Fortunate, then, that we have a further opportunity here.
Indeed, brother.
Joadec went quiet, but lingered on the rock with Cleric. His armor was the same heliotrope purple as his comrades, only not as well tended. It was battle-worthy, but festooned with fetishes, strings of severed hands, ears, and other appendages. Joadec also liked spikes and had hammered them into his pauldrons, greaves, and boots, any plate that would take them. They even protruded from his cheeks and close-shorn scalp. For a servant of Slaanesh, he was an ugly brute.
"You deliver your message, and yet you are still here, forcing me to breathe the same air," said Cleric. "Evidently, you have a question."
"Do you believe what is said about him?"
"About whom, Joadec?"
"The captain. That he killed all of his old comrades and took their flesh for his own."
"I don't know."
"That he is not a man at all, but an amalgam of several."
"I don't care."
"You should, Cleric. What if he has designs on killing us, we, his inner circle?"
"You say that so proudly."
"I have no desire to be part of his shared flesh."
"Nor I," Cleric agreed. "But there are others who would certainly like to kill us."
Cleric gestured to the street rubble below and the warrior sifting through it. He offered Joadec his scope. He didn't need it to see, but he enjoyed the enhanced detail it provided. Detail was important.
"She is searching for something," said Joadec, adjusting the focus on the scope.
"No, she has what she seeks. It just isn't what she wanted to find." "That's where they killed Vogue,"
Cleric uttered solemnly. Joadec sniffed his contempt.
"Vogue was a bastard.
He was also a cruciator, and they do not die easily or well."
"His slayers entered from the north,"
Joadec replied, returning the scope to Cleric, who took a good look.
"I have already seen them."
Cleric shook his head, nonplussed and unimpressed at the same time.
"How did they kill him?"
"That remains a mystery," said Joadec.
Cleric put the scope away and started to back down the ridgeline, careful not to raise too much noise, lest they be discovered.
"Tell me something, brother,"
he said to Joadec as they dipped out of sight together.
"If Lufurion killed them all, who lived to tell this tale?"
"Priest claims a demon told him."
"My brother should take more care about who he shares his secrets with."
Joadec laughed as if suddenly understanding a joke.
"Heh, priest, cleric. Say nothing further unless you aren't attached to that fool's tongue sitting in your mouth."
"You have to admit, it is amusing."
"You find everything amusing, Joadec."
"Especially this, and death."
"Would you find your own death so funny, I wonder?"
Joadec answered with silence.
"Thought not,"
Cleric replied as they reached the bottom of the ridge and made their way back through the ruins to their dark masters.